I have more on my slides than that. Okay, here we go. Thank you. I'm very excited to be presenting in this this session all about extracellular enzymes and the mechanisms that drive them. And the last talk by Gutierrez was a perfect segue to the talk that I'm going to give, also about spatial variation in extracellular enzyme activities. The premise behind the work that I did, along with my co-authors, is that these enzymes are produced by a microbial community, and that microbial community varies from place to place, as well as the extracellular enzymes. And so we're interested in gaining insights into variation of both the community and the enzymes by looking at how they respond in concert to a common landscape. From community ecology in general, this is the community ecology of any organisms, there are a variety of hypotheses about what causes variation in composition in space. And these can be broken into a couple of broad categories. One of those categories involves dispersal limitations, so we have limited range dispersal of organisms, and that leads to autocorrelation, spatial autocorrelation of the microbial community. So that's illustrated in this conceptual slide with the red and star organisms, in this case, not responding to environmental variation, like is indicated by this pool, whereas there may be other organisms that are better adapted to that environment. And in that case, what we have are organisms that are similar because they're close together, not necessarily because the environment is similar. The other broad category of causes of variation in space and community composition has to do with longer range dispersal, which allows organisms the opportunity to colonize the habitats that they most that they might be best adapted to. And so in that case, we might have the Pac-Man and purple organisms available to colonize this pool environment. So that was one aspect of what we were interested in terms of the microbial community itself. And on top of that, we wanted to know what factors would drive extracellular enzyme activities if we have one of those scenarios. So here I've got the dispersal limited scenario again. And the question is, would we have enzyme activities that reflect the variation in community composition? Or because of functional redundancy and physiological plasticity within the microbial community, would we see enzymes responding to the environment to a greater extent than the community composition, the taxonomic profiles? So we set out to investigate these hypotheses in a 30-hectare research site owned by Kent State University in Northeast Ohio. It is a nice site to work in because we have a variety of forest types clustered together and adjacent at this site. And we established 132 sampling points across this area. And the separation distances spanned the entire range from 2 meters separated up to 600 meters across these ecosystems and also across microheterogeneity, which exists within each ecosystem. So for example, we have vernal pools in the upland forest and the riparian forest, which also dry down into muddy patches in the forest, which we also sampled in. So the idea was to look at the environment by looking at soil properties. We looked at particle size distribution, pH, carbon and nitrogen content, and percent moisture to characterize the environment that the microbes were seeing in the soil. We looked at community composition using a molecular method called TRFLP, which I'm not going to describe very much other than to say that it gives a molecular profile of dominant community members. And so we're able to look at taxonomic composition using this method. And then we did a suite of extracellular enzyme assays using basically standard assays, MUB-linked fluorometric assays for the hydrolytic enzymes and the DOPA-based colorimetric assays for the oxidases. And then again, the idea is to take either the matrix that we generate with the T-riflet profiles or the enzyme profiles and relate that to environmental variation and geographic proximity. And to model this, we used a method called principal coordinates of neighbor matrices, which allows us to model variation on basically any scale within this sampling area. So we then partition the variance in the community or enzymatic profiles using a method called redundancy analysis and see how much is explained by those environmental variables versus the geographic variables. And these are our results. We've got adjusted R squared, in other words, how much of the variation in these different profiles, enzymatic profiles or bacterial or fungal T-riflet profiles, is accounted for by these different factors, with the white bar, part of these bars being residual or unexplained variation. And it's a good thing we didn't just do fungi in this system, because basically we're not explaining any variation in fungi. We don't know what's going on there, although we have some ideas that it's related to the plant community. We've done quite a bit of work with the plant community, but we haven't incorporated it into this analysis yet. There's going to be a poster tomorrow afternoon in a S7 forest soils session that talks about some of our work on the plant community, and that's being given by Oscar Valverde Barrantes, so you could stop by to see that. On the other hand, bacteria and enzymes look remarkably similar. We have quite a bit of the variation in these profiles being explained by soil properties alone and those geographic variables alone. This is the spatial autocorrelation, which is independent of the soil properties. And then some amount of variation, which is explained by soil properties, but because there's some autocorrelation within the soil properties themselves, there's overlap that we can't necessarily disentangle autocorrelation from control by soil properties. And that's indicated by this green section. I think the most parsimonious approach to looking at that for now, until we have evidence indicating otherwise, is that it's driven by these soil properties that we measured. So these look fairly similar, the enzymatic profiles and the bacterial profiles, at least in terms of what's explaining variation, spatial variation within them. In order to test our hypothesis more explicitly, we wanted to look at this in more detail, and so we wanted to know whether or not the samples that are similar, say, because of soil properties, in terms of enzyme profiles, are also the same samples that are similar in terms of bacterial taxonomy. And so in order to do that, we generated redundancy analysis ordination plots for both enzymes and bacteria. And the advantage of these redundancy analysis ordinations is that it allows us to cut away all of the other variation that we're not interested in for this particular analysis. We cut away the residual variation, and in this case, we've cut away the geographic variation, and we're just focused on the soil properties. I'm not gonna linger on this very long. Kurt was telling me just yesterday, I think, that people either love these or they hate them. And I love them, I guess. I think Kurt hates them, but the point is that we're able to generate a picture of these profiles, or the relationships between the samples of these for these profiles, which is entirely explained by soil properties. So we did that for bacteria and enzymes, and then we did a couple of multivariate analyses to indicate how closely those two pictures resemble each other. Do we have the same samples being similar for the two different ordinations? And we did that through a Mantell analysis. We have a relatively high correlation, which is highly significant between those two ordinations. We also used a Procrustes analysis, which basically rotates and stretches one ordination to try to get it to fit the picture in the other one as well as possible. And when we did that, what we generate is a diagram which indicates that optimal fit, but it's not a perfect fit. And what you're seeing here, these blue arrows are residual, basically residuals of that analysis. And the arrows are not particularly long. Again, it's not a perfect fit, but the arrows aren't particularly long, and none of the samples are, for example, leaving the quadrant that they're starting in order to get to what would be a perfect fit. So we have actually a pretty good relationship between enzymes and bacterial T. riflet profiles to the extent that both are explained by soil properties. Now the next question, which was more closely related to dispersal limitation, would be what about the variation that's explained by geography? We did similar types of ordinations. We also generated these distance plots, which are showing the scale of autocorrelation for both bacteria and T. riflet profiles. And what you can see in these two plots is that a measurement of community variability or distance increases about to 100 meters or so for both bacteria and enzymes, and then distance levels off. So we've got autocorrelation for both of them over the range of about 100 meters. This was pretty exciting when we saw this. It's looking like we may have dispersal limitation within the taxonomic profiles, potentially indicating some limitation in enzymatic capability of the community. But when we looked at the ordinations and tried to compare them, and now we were just looking at geographic proximity, the Mantell correlation is negative 0.008. It's pretty non-significant. And the Procrustes residuals is just an explosion of arrows. So basically, even though they're autocorrelated on the same spatial scales, they're not following the same pattern. And it's completely independent factors that are driving that autocorrelation. So to come back to this conceptual diagram, to summarize some of these results, it looked like we had evidence of a portion of the community varying in response to environmental variables like moisture, carbon, and pH. And there was also a portion of the enzymatic profiles that was varying in response to the same set of variables and had the exact same pattern. We also had a portion of the variability of the bacterial profiles which looked like they were autocorrelated and potentially limited by dispersal range. But when we compared that to enzyme profiles, we had basically a separate pattern. So it wasn't that the taxonomy was limiting enzymatic production in this case. There was something else going on, and we don't have a really good explanation for what that is yet. We've got a couple of ideas. One could be a response to other environmental variables that we didn't measure. Again, we're working with the plant community. We're also looking at soil phosphorus levels. We just haven't gotten that data integrated into this analysis yet. There might also be dispersal limitation of a key species, which gets glossed over in that multivariate analysis of the T. riflet profiles, which we might be able to pick up with sequencing or another method like that. After listening to the last few talks, I think maybe stabilization of soil enzymes could play an important role. And so that's something that we could look at. And I just want to leave off with this this note that I think it's critical for us to understand this spatial variation for both bacterial community composition, fungal community composition, and the enzyme profiles for a whole variety of reasons. It's a natural condition that defines soil systems, and if we want to say that we understand these systems, we should know what's driving that variation. It is also really important because it confounds our experimental designs and our attempts to perform experiments in soil. It confounds attempts to model. I think it could be important in some attempts to look at temporal variation, and that was brought up earlier as well. And then finally, it provides context to a lot of the mechanisms that we would like to say are important in driving variation in enzymes and carbon cycles. With that, I'm done. I'd like to take any questions. Thanks. Yep.
Do you speculate on why the fungi did not show a good correlation to enzymes when the traditional soil ecology model is that fungi are more resource or competition controlled and bacteria are the predatory controlled or top down?
I think that we would probably see a better correlation, and hopefully we'll see a better correlation when we look at the forest floor. This was the top 10 centimeters of the A horizon, which has a greater amount of bacterial influence than some other portions of terrestrial ecosystems. I would say at this point that it looks like the bacteria are more important in driving enzymatic activities in that portion of the soil. Does that answer your question? I'm not quite sure I understood the top-down, bottom-up part. But.
Well, I guess the traditional paradigm in Oracle's book and other people have shown that, that fungi are more resource or bottom-up limited. So you'd expect because of the nutrient availability controlling enzyme activities that they might be more correlated to some of the
Yeah, and actually we didn't really look specifically at how much variation in enzyme activities would be explained by fungal community composition, because we weren't explaining fungal community composition with any of the other variables that we were looking at. So I wouldn't go that far based on this data. It could be related to fungal biomass, which is probably correlated with plant production in those different areas. There may be portions of the bacterial community as well that are just more resource limited than top-down limited. And those maybe are the ones that are important in those systems for producing enzymes.
On your TRIF update on your bacterial community structure inference, were you using that to predict their radical models like that from the MICA website?
We were using it as a fingerprint for the community. Yep.
Maybe I missed that in your talk, but I'm missing the effect of vegetation and the age of the forest site. So, I mean, they probably also.
Right. The age should be fairly homogeneous across this. It's not a huge forest stand. It's about 30 hectares. As far as the vegetation composition and biomass goes, that's something that I mentioned was ongoing, and we have a poster going up tomorrow about some of our work about that.
Okay, I'd like to open this. Thank you. And I'd like to open this to other discussion. And you have questions for any of the speakers, you're welcome to do so, or anyone can jump in and present your view on the subject or the question. Any questions for any of the speakers, previous speakers?
Any question?
She wanted to know about how are we measuring the temperature sensitivity of the enzymes at different seasons, essentially. The data I presented today, I measured them at 4 degrees and 20 degrees. Now my lab's using an assay, almost pretty much our standard assay uses four different temperatures. So we're still measuring in the lab, but rather than 20 degrees or 37 degrees, we're measuring at a range so we can measure that temperature sensitivity. I've actually done them below freezing too by adding some glycerol to the, and there's still plenty of activity below freezing. They are still very active. Like their optimal temperature would be above pretty much any condition they'd ever see. That's typical for whatever reason. I mean, they're probably, well, I've seen studies where there is a correlation between the climate and the optimal temperature. Optimal temperature always seems to be above the natural range, but I'm not sure optimal temperature is a very important ecological aspect of the enzymes.